excuse us for the very long executive session we had. Yeah. If anybody is here for the graduation requirements, we have decided to put those off for a month, so you don't need to be here for graduation requirements. Returning to our agenda and going in the order in which they are, we first need to take up the disciplinary proceedings on 1202. The next item on the agenda is a consideration of the Office of Administrative Court case number 2013-0016.
What happened to 15? There's another one before that. 1201.
There's that. 1201. Okay, 2015. Same thing. Oh, I didn't see that there were two. Okay. Consideration of the Office of Administrative Court cases number 2013-0015. Is there any discussion or is there a motion?
I have a motion.
Yes.
Which one is that?
1201.
1201.
Regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning Office Administrative Court's case number 2013-0015, I move to affirm the decision of the Administrative Law Judge.
Is there a second?
Second.
Jane? We have a motion and a second to affirm the decision of the Administrative Law Judge. Is there any objection?
I object.
Would you call the roll, Ms. Markle?
Well, we can't discuss much.
Well, I asked for discussion, and she said she objected, so
Steve,
nobody else said anything.
No.
Dr. Flores.
No.
Jane Dowd.
Yes.
Pam Masnick.
Yes.
Marsh Neal.
Yes.
Dr. Sheffel.
Yes.
Dr. Schroeder.
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to 1202. Next item on the agenda is consideration of the Office of the Administrative Court case number 2013-0016. Is there a motion?
I have a motion. Regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning Office of Administrative Court case number 2013-0016, I move to affirm the decision of the Administrative Law Judge.
Is there a second?
Second.
Pam, are you seconding or are you just
no,
waving
I'm
your hand?
I'm trying to get my
just
internet.
Jane seconded.
We're Jane second.
I'll second.
Is there any objection? With no objection?
No.
He objected. I'm sorry, I didn't see you. Okay, call the roll, please.
Steve Durner.
No.
Dr. Flores.
No.
Jane Goff.
Yes.
Pam Masnick.
Yes.
Marsha Neal.
Yes.
Dr. Sheffel.
Yes.
Dr. Schroeder.
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you. All right. We are now moving down to the rulemaking hearing for revision to the rules for the administration of the READ Act.
Right.
Is it the Chinese endorsement?
No,
Chinese
we're going
language.
Oh, graduation requirements. Right. I'm sorry.
No.
No. Chinese language.
Get off.
No.
Jump
that.
What you told me, no.
Yeah, no.
the guest network's being
weird. Well, who listens
to the
computer? Who knows what we're doing?
We're on 1201.
Okay.
Right. Oh, and we're skipping
the time.
Gotcha.
And
yeah,
we're going to come back and do
okay.
Progress.
Yeah.
The rulemaking hearing, 1501.
Yeah, you're correct.
Yeah. I was right.
I didn't know we were skipping.
1501.
Okay. And then we'll come back to the Chinese endorsement.
Okay? Gotcha.
Come back to the Chinese. Yeah, a few minutes.
Do we have everybody go?
Okay.
Is everybody leaving?
The Colorado State Board of Education will now conduct a public rulemaking hearing for rules for the administration of the READ Act, CR 301-92. State Board approved the notice of rulemaking at its February 18th, 2015 board meeting, and the State Board is authorized to promulgate these rules pursuant to 22-7-1209. Parent 1, Parent A, Parent E, CRS, and Colorado Formal Opinion number 1402. Commissioner, is staff prepared to provide an overview?
Yes, for the sake of time, I'm just going to turn it over to staff. We've discussed several times, and now we're ready to update you again.
Yes, all right.
See where we go.
Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you.
And members of the board, we're here to just present to you once again for consideration revisions to the READ Act rules. We bring these revisions in response to the Attorney General's opinion regarding the identification of significant reading deficiencies for children involved in the Colorado READ Act K through 3 students. You have in your packet a copy of the Attorney General's opinion. You have the PowerPoint slides that we will be sharing in just a moment. You have the proposed rule changes along with a crosswalk of those changes. Additionally, we'll get to in a moment that you have feedback from written comments that we've received since the last board meeting that we'll be glad to address before we move to public comment. So you'll see on the screen or in your handout that in the state of Colorado, when we talk about literacy programming, there are really two types of literacy programs that support children in our state. One type of programming is through English literacy instruction. The other type of programming is through bilingual literacy instruction. You'll see on the screen that there are the students who are in the English literacy model receive their instruction primarily or exclusively in English, and then they receive additional support to help develop their English language through English language development programs. In the bilingual literacy programming, students may receive their instruction in more than one language, helping to develop their English literacy, as well as developing or supporting their primary or native language. Depending on the type of programming, the instructional sequence may vary. This is determined basically by local district policy and programming implementation. On the next slide, what you'll see is a distribution representing the K-3 population in Colorado for which students, there are 270,000, I should say, kindergarten through third grade students in the state of Colorado. About 49,000 of those children are students who speak more than one language. 39,000 of those children are represented here in the chart because Spanish is their second language or primary language, and they're developing English language. And then you'll see on the pie that about 6,800 of those children are represented in the type of programming for which this opinion applies. That number of students, 6,800, represents about 11 districts across the state of Colorado. We have engaged stakeholders and constituents in a process over several months to help give us the kind of feedback that we need to bring forth the rules that you see before you today. And we have provided for you in the document that you'll see a crosswalk of those changes. Those changes are minimal and really specifically in response to the opinion. Each of those changes provided in the crosswalk show the original language and the proposed language. You also have a copy of those as they would appear in full document for adoption. We have received written comments from 9 commentors over the course of the last several weeks and months, and we have responded and provided you some feedback based on those commenters' questions to us, and you have those available in front of you. Essentially, we are responding to the Attorney General's opinion. We are maintaining local decision-making according to implementation, and we are supportive, if you will, to the goal that is already in your READ Act rules to have an outcome for students, and that is that they be proficient, supported through their identification services by the end of third grade to be competent, healthy readers, comprehending in English. If you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer them at this time.
Excuse me.
Pam?
Would you just repeat that last?
Your rules in your crosswalk document, your present rules continue to state that We are supportive of students in kindergarten through third grade through READ Act in developing their proficiency as readers. And the language says, by assessing them in their language of instruction, leading towards reading comprehension for these English limited English proficiency students by giving this district criteria and documentation. And it goes on to say, leading to their proficiency in reading and English.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, we would be ready for public comment. Oh.
Are we discussing now or after public comment?
Madam Chair, I would.
Now or before or after public comment? You have no preference? What do you think, Deb? You want to ask it now or wait until the public comment?
We can wait until public comment.
Okay, we'll wait for public comment. Do I have that, Liz?
She's on her way.
Oh, she's on her way to get public comment. Okay. We sure have lots of public comments today, don't we? Once again, our public comments rules are that people who signed up have 3 minutes to speak, and Carrie, our secretary, will be timing it when she holds up her little 3-minute thing. You're supposed to stop talking, finish the sentence, and then finish as quickly as possible. And if you go on too long, then we quiet you down. We only have 8 people scheduled, so that shouldn't take too long. First person up is Kara Biska. Did I do that right?
Almost.
Not quite.
It's not a name that everyone pronounces correctly, no worries. My name is Kara Mitchell-Vieska. I am a professor at CU Denver in the Culturally and Linguistically Diverse Education Program. I also lead a collaboration in the state called HELDI. It stands for Higher Educators in Linguistically Diverse Education. And we have submitted written comment. I'm just here to reaffirm that we feel really strongly that these rules should be passed. We have participated in the development of these rules, and we feel that they've been very participatory and open. We've collaborated with districts and schools, and we've heard how valuable these rules would be. But also from like a teaching and research perspective, I can say that these are the right rules to be passed. One of the big confusions around working with bilingual kids, particularly in the realm of literacy, is where does literacy end and language development begin? And so I just ask you to think for a minute, if I submitted to you right now a test of your literacy skills in Chinese, how well would you do? You are literate individuals. You are very capable and educated individuals. But because you need to develop your language proficiency skills in Chinese, you would not do well with that. The same would be true for German or any other language that you don't know. Even if the orthographic system is different in a language, the literacy skills we develop in our language of strongest proficiency transfer into other languages as we develop those language skills. So what's really important to recognize here is the opportunity for these rules to reduce the over-identification of students as having a reading deficiency when in reality they need language development support. And the kind of interventions that children are given based on having a reading deficiency are very different than the kind of interventions a child would be given if they were identified as needing English language development support. And so it's really going to be a waste of, and already is, a waste of teachers and students' time and our valuable state resources to over-identify students having a deficiency in reading when in reality they need support to develop their English language skills. So we stand firmly in support of these rules. Our group represents over 16 institutions of higher education. We have some of the premier researchers in the nation studying literacy development for bilingual students who stand behind these rules, and in fact have conducted research on Colorado data to illustrate the problematic nature of over-identifying bilingual kids as having reading deficiencies when in reality they're on a natural trajectory towards bilingualism, biliteracy, and strong levels of English proficiency. And I, in the written comments that I'm also happy to give a copy of, their citation is there. It's a new piece that came out in the Journal of Literacy Research, and it is Colorado research. So we stand firmly in support and hope that they will be passed.
Thank you. Louis Poza? Did I do that one right?
Yeah, Luis Poza. Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to contribute. I'm a colleague of Dr. Mitchell Viescas in the Culturally Linguistically Diverse Education Program at CU Denver School of Education and Human Development. And likewise, I'd like to speak in favor of the revised rules. So there's a robust body of scholarship suggesting that students' literacy skills in the home language transfer and support literacy development in a target language, dating all the way back to the work of Wallace Lambert with bilingual students in the 60s, through to Jim Cummins in the 70s and 80s, through to the work of Sue Hopewell, Kathy Escamilla, now happening here in Colorado in our current times. And these revised rules acknowledge this research. They recognize the value of home language literacy development as a scaffold and stepping stone, with its own inherent value, of course, but also as a support for the acquisition of literacy in English. As my colleague mentioned, we know that even when orthographic systems and grammar and vocabulary may differ across languages, notions of concepts of print, notions of reading for comprehension and for meaning making, those concepts can transfer. And the new rules allow for the disentangling of the of recognizing when students have struggles with those concepts versus when they have struggles with the linguistic system itself. Thank you.
Thank you. Sarah Sampaio.
Hi. I'm Sarah Sampaio, and I have three children in Monument. And my husband is Hispanic. His first language was Spanish. And as a result, my special needs child was tested for ELL. He was labeled as an English language learner due to test results. We've never spoken Spanish to him. He has a learning disability. He has a slow mental processing issue. He has received this label, and we cannot get it off because he cannot get out of the testing requirements because of his learning disability. So he is stuck, as the first person talked about, in over-labeling. And this is one of the problems in trying to categorize children and label them based on all these rules and regulations, is they're human beings, and there's many factors involved. The other thing I'd like to speak to is the fact that he has a slow learning speed, a processing speed with his brain. He cannot read fast. And in the READ Act, for proficiency, there's a speed requirement. He's 13. He's doing fine in school, but he would potentially still be in third grade. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Anita Stapleton down on the line. Is Anita in the room?
See, I wrote her in because you mentioned if we didn't get in 10:30.
Oh, okay, because I'm sure she would be speaking on another area. I just didn't want her to think I was ignoring her. Dema, D-E-A-M-A, with no last name? She was with Anita, I guess. George Garcia. Jorge, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jorge Garcia. I was going to say, if it please the court. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, thank you very much. Last time I spoke with you about this issue, I wanted to make the point strongly that any test in English to a student who is not proficient in English is a test of English. So we need to keep in mind that what we're talking about here is an act that recognizes that it's important to determine whether or not a child needs additional support to learn to read. And you have the Attorney General's opinion saying that being assessed in Spanish was part of the intent of the READ Act. So you have the READ Act. You know what the legislature intended. You have the Attorney General's opinion, so you have the highest legal opinion short of a court saying that these are the appropriate changes to the rule. But you also have heard some of the research, and I suggest that we have an ethical duty to, if we must assess, and the law, this law says we must assess these children. If we must assess, then we must assess ethically in the manner that will give us valid results. And simply stated, to teach a child who is learning to read in Spanish because of our local control guarantees, to teach a child in Spanish and then use results of an English test to determine whether or not they have a problem with reading is clearly invalid and therefore unethical. I'm not going to waste any more of your time. I just simply want to repeat that in the context of the READ Act, with the law being made clear to us by then Attorney General John Southers, and the feedback that the department has received from the locals, what's best for kids is that we pass these revised rules and go about working with our children in our classrooms. Thank you.
Thank you. Very interesting. Alyssa Whitehead.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Whitehead-Bust. I'm the Chief Academic and Innovation Officer in Denver Public Schools, and appreciate the opportunity to speak to the board again today about the district's strong support of the proposed rules. You've heard me speak before about our gratitude for the opportunity both to collaborate with staff and to express our support for rules that allow us to do a very important assessment to identify students who have significant reading deficiencies, but to do so in a manner that honors the assets and unique instructional needs of our English language learners. In our district of 90,000 students, nearly 40% come to us with the asset of a native language other than English. And as we think about our assessment programming, it's incredibly important to us within our district to assess using appropriate measures and assessment techniques the unique needs of our students to first and foremost become literate, to be able to read, write, speak, and listen on grade level. In our context, we honor the opportunity to develop literacy both in a student's native language and in English, but also, as you've heard from speakers before me, to develop uniquely the English language of our English language learners. And we believe there are unique assessments and instructional programs that allow us to develop English skills as distinct from literacy skills. Third, and incredibly important in our biliteracy context, we believe deeply in maintaining the asset of a student's native language. We believe that students who come to the district with a native language other than English are entitled to the right to maintain that asset as part of their familial and community, as part of their future work attributes, as well as part of their academic pursuits. In our particular case, we have found that our students who enjoy English and Spanish in their day-to-day instruction outperform their peers who speak only English as their first language. For those reasons, we are in strong support of the rules and appreciate the opportunity to address you today.
Thank you. And Dr. Dr. Darlene Lido.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your service to Colorado and to all of our students. As a native Denverite and Coloradan, and as the Executive Director of Academic Achievement for English Learners in the Denver Public Schools, I would like to speak to you today from the voice of parents. We gathered parents of our English learners and asked them, what do you think? Tell us what would you like us to do? And how would you like us to work with your children? Because we truly value the voice of our parents. And this is what they said. They value that their children speak, read, and write in English and in Spanish. They want their children to be able to speak with their own family members in their native language, and also to be able to be successful in college and career and get good jobs. They said get good jobs is how they worded it. They want their children to be bilingual and have more opportunities so that they could help their families and they could help their community. They want their children to learn English and Spanish at the highest levels. They want them to be smart in both. And throughout the world, they know, because many of them have come from other countries, many countries, of course, they know that more than one language is valued, and they're quite confused sometimes as to why we don't seem to value that in the United States, and they want to make sure that we continue to honor their language. But, of course, I'd like to highlight they also want their kids to learn English at high levels. We have, as Alyssa mentioned, we have 34,000 students in the Denver Public Schools that speak languages other than English and are learning English. And of the 34,000 students, the majority are Spanish-speaking. Our parents have the right to choose a classroom that where their children can learn content in their native language and English, and or just in English. And we want to continue, the parents want to be continue the right and the privilege to be able to choose that, because in either classroom their kids will be English proficient. And I just would like to highlight for your information on the Access Assessment, which is the score of English language proficiency for the state of Colorado. Our students in Denver had a 6% gain last year. We continue to have some of the highest scores in the state, and that's our fifth straight year in a row of gain in English language proficiency. So I just would like to remind you about the benefits, the academic benefits for our kids, and that's why we strongly support the recommendation of our colleagues in the Colorado Department of Education specific to the rules and the READ Act. Thank you.
Thank you. Gregory, did you send an email to Ms. Schroeder?
No.
Gregory, how many students are with you?
I'm sorry?
Would you come to the mic,
yes,
please? You said you wanted to testify and you had some other
people. Not on this issue, I'm sorry.
Oh, apologize, you're on a different issue.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for your time. Then is there anyone else who wants to speak on this issue? If not, we'll close that and go back to the business at hand. All right. Thank you all very much for those of you who spoke. I had a better appreciation for Hispanic children who are learning to speak English and they can't speak Spanish, or, you know, the whole thing. I've got a much better picture of that from listening to you. I appreciate that. All right. Go ahead, please. Who's next? Are we going to proceed?
Madam Chair, I believe now it's open for your discussion about the rules.
Okay. Yeah. Questions from the board? Pam.
If we value bilingualism, why would we not test a Spanish-speaking student in English until after the third grade? I mean, if we change the rules as proposed, isn't it true that Spanish-speaking students might not ever be assessed in English through these approved interim assessments until after the third grade? Is that true?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
It is possible, as you described, that a student may be in the K-3 range for which READ Act applies, and that if their instruction, per the Attorney General's opinion, was being provided in both English and Spanish, and they were eligible to take the Spanish assessment as a choice that the district would make, that that district could remain in making that decision for that child through the entire K-3 range. However, your rules, as they are presently, do state that, as I was mentioning in 9.01E, that your rules currently state that they should be assessed in the language or languages of instruction leading towards comprehension in English. So,
but
it is possible.
That's a statement that does not require English language learners to be assessed in English, correct?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would say that you are correct that is a possibility.
But may I state something, Madam Chair?
Yes. Put your mic down, please.
Yes. I did teach, but we had to assess English every year to see how, and in English, to see how kids were gaining, how much English they were gaining. So they have to be taught. I don't know. This happens in Denver public schools. I can't imagine that it wouldn't happen in other places where you need to know how English, how much English is being gained every year. And that was one of the areas where I was checked off as a teacher. So I've never been in a classroom where, even if it were bilingual, meaning if the instruction were in another language, you also have to start very early with English, and they must be able to get to a certain point in English, or else. I just don't see how by third grade many kids have to take, in 3 years, they have to take their tests in English because they've been in a system for 3 years. So I've just never been in, and I've taught in many school districts in the country, but English was something that was always very important, and it was tested.
And your response?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would want to just reiterate that the READ Act is differentiating between assessment for the purpose of identifying those children most at risk for reading difficulty.
Oh, so it's just for reading.
So the READ Act is looking at literacy, mm-hmm. specifically reading, mm-hmm. in the assessments that we measure. Okay. So I just want to be clear that is different than what assessment might be placed in other types of programming that would be assessments towards language proficiency.
Exactly.
So they are.
Excuse me. So that
test you're referring to is the ACCESS test, which is about language proficiency but not about reading proficiency. Right.
Madam Chair, would you like for me to respond?
Yes, please.
I would say yes, that the ACCESS test serves a different purpose than the READ Act interim assessments. The READ Act interim assessments are looking for students who are most at risk, who have reading difficulties, through a prevention-oriented mindset or lens, so we can catch early to prevent interventions from happening later. ACCESS is an assessment that looks at multiple components that measure English language development in different domains.
Thank you. Anybody more? Jane?
Yes. I don't know that everyone would have picked up on it in the same way or had the chance to read the whole set of rules. But there is a much appreciated by me reiteration, whatever you call it, of the order of skill building, of the order of the progression of language acquisition, which includes the listening, the reading, the speaking and writing, and then speaking in that order. Listening, speaking, reading, and writing. So the progression is very important. And in any regard, the reading component is the base. It is the foundation for expanding on and the blossoming of those all of the other skills, and there's really no stop. It's a continuous cycle of skill building. If when the reading is focused on and you can identify accurately where a deficiency might be and really, on the other hand, where the strengths are with reading, it helps an awful lot to plan out and integrate ways to build up the others as well. So the reading is a completely different skill. You know, I am a language teacher by career, doing it for a long time. So the whole idea and the mention in there of, excuse me, the three and or five years when ideally, and this is true of all languages, it is much better to predict that it will take 7 to 10 years in order to build adequate, what we would say, fluency communication ability. I am appreciative of the new rule change proposals. I think this is, I think it's wise. I do not feel that it precludes any emphasis in a classroom or otherwise on English language building because, frankly, I live a life of where one builds the other. You cannot not impact the skill level in one by separate. You just do if you've got two things going on at once. The other thing, at some point down the road, perhaps I would like to be. I'd like to know. At some point, we talk about low achieving, high achieving, whether it's district schools, classrooms, as far as language ability is related. How many of our top achieving students and prize winners are involved in multiple language activities? If we have heritage learners and so forth. There is such a growing body of evidence about the value of second and more language learning exactly. And how that builds on the skills that are just innate in all content areas. So, thank you. I'm pretty sure I understand what the difference is between looking for reading proficiency or significant deficiency versus the linguistics part of it. And I don't think we have to give up the linguistics building in any language if we focus on what these rules are trying to do.
Thank you. Jane, any more questions from the board? Any comments from me? Deb?
Thank you. Thanks for the great discussion so far. My concern is that I really appreciate the comments because I think they go right to the heart of the issue, which is we want to honor ELL students' biliteracy and bilingualism. We need that. Parents want that. Our society wants that. We need that. The question I have is the confusing language being used to achieve that. So if we look at the AG's opinion, part of the problem perhaps rests in a confusion about the question in the opinion. So if I look at page 2, the top of the page, it says, the question at issue here is whether the READ Act effectively prohibits dual language programs by requiring reading proficiency to be developed in English only. The rules in the statute expressly prohibit that out of the gate. So that wasn't a question that was really needing to be posed because the law and the rules already said it required assessment in English and Spanish. Further on the same page, specifically, the question presented is whether those districts utilizing literacy instruction in both English and Spanish must assess whether the students have a significant reading deficiency in English only. Again, the original rules and law expressly prohibited that and said the testing must be in Spanish and English. So I think the prompt for this adjustment of the rules was based on questions that in some ways need not have been posed based on the statute and the rules, which is why this whole discussion strikes me as odd. From the beginning. So I don't know how the questions got posed, but I just know that in the statute and the rules it said already, students must be tested in English and Spanish. So if we honor biliteracy and bilingualism, I think these rules actually put us behind. And so I'd like to ask three questions. Tell me if I'm interpreting the language wrong then. I think if I read this new iteration of these rules correct, I think that whereas in the previous set of rules, there was a provision for those who speak a first language other than English in the law exempting them from retention, now those students could be retained simply because they are ELL. I wonder if someone from the literacy unit, perhaps you, Elisa, could address that. I think in a way we're turning it back such that we could now retain those students merely because they're ELL.
I'm trying to go to Inspector Matthew. Chucking it out there.
I just wanted to get to, Madam
That's
Chair, get to the right page to be able to respond. So the law, as it is in statute, provides a protection for students who are English learners who, if tested in English and found that their language was the contributing factor to their identification, would be exempt
right.
from certain discussions like that of retention. On page 4 in the opinion, I'm going to get to the right place here. It does say that these students would essentially, I'm trying to find where it is, would potentially be subject to a retention discussion when their identification was actually determined to be a deficiency in reading, and so that protection would then be removed if their identification was through a Spanish assessment.
So whereas before, in the previous iteration of the rules, we could not hold those students back merely because of a because their first language is Spanish, now they can be held back. I think that that puts us back 20 years. So that's one problem I have. I have other issues, if I can continue.
Madam yes. Chair, I'm sorry. Just to be clear, I may have left out just one distinguishing point that I just want to be clear about. The designation of a significant reading deficiency is what subjects a child to a discussion about having retention as one strategy for supporting that child. So that determination through the READ Act and through the opinion can now be made in English or in Spanish, so that we would not have the consideration of language being a part of the discussion, but rather we would have the identification correct in knowing that it was, in fact, a deficiency in reading. So I just wanted to be sure that I had said that correctly.
But if we don't have data in both languages, how can we make that determination?
So, Madam Chair.
Yes.
May I just reiterate and ask your question again? Are you saying if we have only Spanish or only English interim assessment data for children in this type of programming, we wouldn't necessarily know that they had developed the goal of biliteracy? I'm asking, is that your question?
Yes.
Okay.
It seems to me we can make that determination if we have contrasting data in both languages. If these students don't have to be tested in English at all, and how can we make that distinction?
Madam Chair, again, as part of local programming, that would be a decision that a local district could make as far as the way that they would approach measurement of students' progress towards the goal.
So we're having a hard time on this board in trying to sort out these nuances, and now we're going to just say the districts can figure it out? I mean, they may be able to, but all I know is when I look at the data for ELL students, if you look at the 10th grade data, these students are being grossly underserved in this state. We need their bilingualism. We need to know that they're achieving in English and Spanish. And now we're creating rules that because, in my thought, I think because the questions were not posed accurately, we are now reversing it such that we can hold these students back because we don't have the data to call that out.
We didn't have the testing assessment tools.
So that's one issue. Excuse me, that's one issue. I wonder if I may raise another.
Are you finished answering?
Yes, Madam Chair. Okay, I don't think there was another question.
I think another issue that's, I think, been confusing in this discussion is the access test. And we're using the word language in many different ways. We have oral language, listening and speaking, and written language, reading and writing. And when we talk about the access test, it is not a literacy test. So to say that teachers and schools will have literacy data using access that can somehow take the place of the assessments that were able to give us the contrasting data in the previous set of rules, which really are pretty much the same except for 9.01D, is not accurate. So I think we need to be very clear on that. That language has been very diffuse in our discussions. The districts don't have data allowing them to make the determination that this law attempts to help schools and districts make to figure out why students are not achieving in reading. And they won't have that data. And the access test certainly does not give them that data. And, you know, if we want to pull up the actual items on the test, it is not a literacy assessment. So I would like to know that we're supporting bilingualism, biliteracy, and ELL achievement in the state. And when you look at the data right now, it's abysmal. And to me, these rules set us back substantially.
Any reply to Deb before we move on?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you.
The original language in the rules said that districts are allowed to assess in English and Spanish so long as you don't supplant it. I mean, it can supplement but not replace the English language assessment. Tell me why that is too much to ask.
Madam Chair. Yes. And we may also turn it to Tony, because that is the actual question that was asked in the formal opinion. But I will share that what...
I'm sorry, what are you saying was the actual question?
The question about what our rules stated, and if we had overstepped from what the statute said in terms of making it a supplement, not supplanting the English assessment. What we found in working with districts was... an unintended consequence of the rules, which is that folks who were implementing bilingual programs, by the fact that we were requiring the identification of a reading deficiency to be in English, that there was an unintended impact of having students falsely identified who were Spanish speakers in that mix. And it was a language issue, not a literacy issue. And so to allow what the opinion, we asked them for help to understand, did we overstep in our rules? And the formal opinion came back and said, yes, folks should have the ability to assess for that literacy piece in Spanish and English. They could choose. So it's for that identification purpose.
Aren't you telling me that they actually, what we're providing here is an or, not an and?
Correct. They could test in English or Spanish.
Why don't we have an and?
And I'll turn it over to Tony to talk about, because we looked at that option.
Well, yeah, that's right. And I think that the short answer to that question is that it would result in unnecessary double testing. Here's the problem. Jorge Garcia actually kind of drilled down into this. The original reg said, in grades K through 3, determination that a child has a significant reading deficiency in English will be based on. This was interpreted in the field as meaning that even if you have a kindergartner who speaks fluent Spanish and doesn't know English, you give them the English version. And you say, if they can't finish it, that kid has a significant reading deficiency. Kid might read perfectly well in Spanish, but they reinterpreted our regs to say, no, you have to make that determination based solely on English. Yeah. That was the original question posed. And the answer was, well, no, you're not actually looking at English acquisition. What you're looking at is reading and literacy acquisition. And in grades K through 3, it's possible that there could be kids who don't have a reading deficiency. They just are reading in a different language.
But we still want them to read proficiently in English, even if they're reading proficiently in Spanish, do we not?
Yes, we do.
And if we do,
and that's, however, where access comes in. There's actually an entire system of English language acquisition in the state. It's not part of the READ Act. But it's there, and presumably these kids who are identified as ELL will be in both. They might be in, they will be in either a bilingual or, you know, another English language program. But then you have the separate issue of reading acquisition.
Madam Chair, if you recall, we had a school district that we looked at last the last time that we met, and they had a 12% special ed population. And I'm sure that that 12% population was there because they weren't using instruments in Spanish, you know, to show whether, most of the time, special ed is because of reading, not usually because of math or so. And I voiced a concern about a large number of, 12% is a large number of kids who are special ed. Now, had they been tested in reading in their native language, it might have been a different thing. They may have gone down to 3-4%. And this is kind of the issue that I think is before us, and why we can't use the DIBELS test. And so I'm so glad that we have other instruments in Spanish. And we're going to look at one in Chinese. And that's going to help our kids. That really is going to help our kids. So yep. That they're not identified as special ed.
Yep. Excuse me, and I think you make the exact point that needs to be made, which is why testing needs to be in both languages. When you limit it to one language, you have no contrasting data to answer the why question at all. And that's why I feel like the two, I mean, if this opinion is based on the argument of the access testing, which is not literacy, and double testing, I think it's a specious argument. We're not doing double testing. We're doing assessment in both languages, which is what we must do. Which is what we must do to identify why the difference. And I think when we're only teaching in Spanish, we can't get to the goal of this act, which is proficiency in English and reading. So, I feel like this sets us back because we end up retaining students that we wouldn't have otherwise retained because we don't have the contrasting data. And not having any data during K-3 on a subset of the population that are so poorly served in our system anyway, we can't identify how they're even doing. And that was the intent of this act. And so I feel that the language around this issue has become so unclear, not sure why. But again, when I look at the question in the opinion and when I look at the outcome of these adjustments in the rules, we end up serving these students far less well than we're even serving them now, which is not well. So,
any further comments? Angelica?
Well, even if we agree with you, if the Attorney General said that's going beyond the legislation, we should not be doing that. I mean, this goes back to what is it that is our job, which is to set rules to the legislation.
And Madam Chair,
am I wrong? I
mean, because the language in the opinion relates to something that didn't exist. It never was English only. That wasn't the point. It was always required in English and Spanish.
I mean, I'm a little flummoxed at because I don't know that I can't agree or disagree with you. This is not my area of expertise.
Well, we can point to the language in the original.
My point is that what we've been told is that we went beyond the language of the legislation, and this is designed to get us back on track. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think you're wrong because the question was not accurate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I understand it, the READ Act is designed to determine whether or not a child can read at grade level, and it's language neutral in that determination. At least that's the Attorney General's opinion. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, it is.
Even so, it's language neutral in whether they can read. And if they can read in Spanish, they meet the compliance. Or if they comply, if they can read in English, they comply. Is it a value in the opinion of the educators to be able to know what the proficiency is in English, since sooner or later that's going to get to be a critical element? Mm-hmm. And is that important to do in grades K-3? And does this rule change eliminate a requirement or in fact institute a requirement of Spanish testing only for Spanish speakers? And then I guess for the attorney, is it possible to require testing in both languages if that's an issue?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
There's actually the second part of the opinion, which is who decides? Mm-hmm. Who decides which assessment? And that that is under the statute left up to the local districts. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that there's a whole host of different types of language acquisition programs. There are some programs out there that use a methodology, agree with it or not, but they'll say we'll start with Spanish, almost mostly Spanish in the early years, and then add English later on. There's other ones that are immersion programs. We start with English, right off the bat. So, well, in drafting this law, it's kind of how do we do a one-size-fits-all? Well, we leave it up to the districts to decide what's programmatically appropriate. So you might have immersion programs where it would make sense to do only English or do double testing. You have bilingual programs where that may not make as much sense in the earlier grades.
So then it's your opinion that the state of the law is that it is ultimately a district decision whether there is a test given in English to non-English speakers?
Ultimately, yes.
Thank you.
Well, actually, it's in this act.
Any further questions? This concludes the rulemaking hearing for the rules of the administration of the READ Act. Is there further discussion?
More motion?
Is the board ready to adopt those rules? If so, is there a motion?
Romalik 1. I move to approve the rules for the administration of the READ Act.
Is there a second?
I second it.
Any discussion? Shall we call the roll?
Steve Durham.
No.
Val Perez.
Yes.
Jane Goff.
Yes.
Pam Masnack.
No.
Marsha Neal.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
So, Madam Chair, the motion fails because it's not unanimous.
Right.
So it comes back next time.
We will come back and take another vote next meeting in which a simple majority will prevail. Okay. Thank you very much. you performed before the firing squad.
Thank you.